Hi, this is John Barnes, and you're listening to Cop On.
Welcome to Cop On Podcast, you sweet and sour raspberry tarts. My name is Owen, and in the 16 days that have passed since recording pre-Everton with a sense of, well, maybe in our hearts, now everything has turned to shit. And in the words of Shakespeare, which is much more poetic, the earth appeareth nothing to me but a foul and pestilent congregation of vapours, because Liverpool's season has really gone down the toilet and has got stuck in the sewer in one of them fatbergs, which, if you don't know what they are, don't Google it, because it will stay with you for the rest of your life, and it's pretty horrible. But on the flip side of horrible, it is absolutely delightful to have Nigel with us. Nigel, welcome back. Jurgen Klopp, I mean, the fat lady, okay, or Big Sam's wife, hasn't sung yet, okay, because there is still mathematically a chance that Liverpool can win the league. But we're out of the Europa, we're out of everything else. I think, you know, it would take an act of God for us to win the league from here. And it looks like, you know, the club has already planned a Jurgen Klopp farewell celebration. And is it just, are you like me, you're already thinking forward to next season and what needs to change, that kind of thing? And are you already starting to look back fondly on Jurgen Klopp with a sense of love and longing and loss?
I want to enjoy what he has left on. You know what I mean? I think we owe him that. We owe ourselves that to give him all the support we can for the last couple of games he has left, and be as good as we can. Hopefully the players will be the same, and just, you know, because he's going to, it doesn't matter, he's going to get the most amazing send-off, that one of the best send-offs there's ever been. He's going to get that. It's sad. It's very sad what has happened, but it might come down to us, in the long run, maybe a little bit more organisation in our recruitment, I think, in previous transfer windows, that we bought three midfielders, I think, last season. But like, we've got a relatively small squad, I think. It's just we lack, I said it there last week, you know, when Spurs started, got two goals back, and then Alisson saved us from getting a third back. We lack a presence. We have Virgil at the back, we kind of have moved up top, and we lack a bit of presence in the middle. Just need somebody to go around grabbing people by the throat. Not our players. Well, sometimes our players, but their players, the opposition players. Need someone to go around there and start giving it to Souness or giving it to Gerrard. You know, just let them know, come on, we need to be stronger. Needs a little bit more of that.
I've been thinking exactly the same thing. I was walking home from going out for a walk on a lovely day in this town, Fontainebleau, in France, and I had a lovely walk earlier, and I was thinking about Graham Souness, and as you say, a presence. We need a snarler. We need someone snapping, and, you know, like Wataru Endo, if you like, but maybe a 24-year-old Wataru Endo with a bit more mobility, but someone who's really, you know, who would walk into the lion's den as a gladiator with a sword and armor, and they would throw their sword down on the ground and that take their armor off and go into battle with the lion completely naked with the plan of ripping its throat out with his teeth. That's the kind of player that I think we need in midfield. Absolutely. Is there anyone out there that springs to mind? I mean, I don't know. There's no one who's got that kind of, you know, that kind of energy that I can think of off the top of my head. I'm sure they're out there. But do you know anyone with that amount of, aggression? And
unfortunately, I've said it before, I don't watch anything like the amount of football I used to because of the levels of officiating. I mean, I was watching a couple of games there during the last few weeks, and our games mostly, And then I watched a couple of European games, and it was chalk and cheese. I watched some of the Bruges game the other night against Gabriel Batistuta's team. What he used to play for?
Fiorentina.
Fiorentina, yes, that was on the other, and it was really entertaining, really, really entertaining. It was excellent to watch. And there was a European game on as well a couple of weeks ago. I think it was my first leg of the semi-final, I think it might have been. And then whichever of the English referees had the second semi-final the second night turned it off after 5 minutes. Haven't a bloody clue, these English referees.
It was terminated with Dortmund PSG, the first leg of that one. It was awful.
Yeah. Well, I remember watching some of the Real Madrid match, the first one then, and that was okay. Just the standard of refereeing has just, that's my big argument about how will you try and get people to watch football. Get that thing sorted out. Now, we won't have to worry too much about VAR with offsides next year. But what about all these things with guys being kicked there and referees not giving penalties?
For the audio listeners, where do you mean by there?
I mean the middle of his chest or your neck, your throat. Alexis McAllister.
Yes.
Getting kicked in the chest by Jeremy Doku. Like, I mean, it's, oh my God, it's, and it, like, it's not something that's one off. It happens all the time. There's these ridiculous decisions, and we keep getting, like, we've had the offside with Luis Diaz this season. We've had the handball by Martin Odegaard playing basketball in the middle of the box for Arsenal. And we've had that other one, and there's been a couple more as well, and we might have got away with a couple as well, maybe. I don't know, but just it's not enticing me to watch football one. So picking out somebody from watching football, which I would have been able to do a few years ago, absolutely no problem whatsoever.
Don't worry about it. But I want to bring up what you're saying though about the referee, about the refereeing, because it has hurt us this year, and it's hurt us for a number of years under Jurgen Klopp. And I think that maybe there's something we can do about it with a new manager, because the refs are clearly biased against Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp. And in a sense, is it partly Jurgen's fault because he didn't realise how petty these idiots were? And he didn't realise that they would bear grudges, you know, over the professionalism that's supposed to be required in their job. And they hold grudges against people. And this is something that we can actually learn from with Arne Slot, to play a much more subtle game with the referees. So, for example, if I was Arne Slot and I had the chance to speak to him before going into the Premier League, I would say, make friends with as many referees as you can. Never openly criticize them, in even though you know that they're going to give a ton of errors and decisions that they're going to make a ton of errors, and they're going to make a ton of decisions that a two-year-old could get right. I would play it that way and just try to, at least on the surface, be friendly with the refs, because they are that unprofessional that they would then be more likely to give you more decisions because you're friendlier with them, as opposed to Klopp, who's been quite openly their enemy.
Well, I think it all starts at the top. I think he has been a dreadful, dreadful appointment as head of referees. It's just time after time after time. When I heard he was coming back, I knew we were in trouble. Straight away, I knew we were in trouble, because he was in Ferguson's pocket for years, and he's an establishment referee, or an establishment figure, so to speak, a puppet of the establishment. And I don't think he's fit for purpose. I don't think there's 90% of the referees, 99% of those referees fit for purpose. You look at what we were saying a few minutes ago, some of the refereeing by the officials from other countries in the European games has been really good. I mean, even when we got bet by Atalanta, like, we got absolutely destroyed. Early on, there was a couple of decisions that didn't go our way. They weren't great, maybe. But after that, I thought the guy settled down and had a very good game after a couple of fairly dodgy decisions that we didn't get. But for the most part, I thought he was quite good. Klopp there or not, I don't think it's going to change. You get rid of Howard Webb, some of these absolute clowns with whistles, I don't think it's going to change. There needs to be.
Well, I mean, yeah. Go on.
There needs to be alteration. There needs to be a different regime.
I'm in total agreement with you, but whether, you know, the Premier League will actually, you know, take note of what people say, and, you know, it's the fans all over the country who all have complaints, unless you're a Man City fan or even a Manchester United fan, they all have complaints about the referees, apart from, you know, as I say, the Manchester clubs. And I don't know if it's something that I've mentioned on Cop On before, but I was listening to a match with commentary, and I think it was John Champion, the commentator, who was trying to be flippant and, you know, was trying to be lighthearted, but he actually stumbled upon a really good point when he was watching. It was Anthony Taylor refereeing a match between Man City and Liverpool? I think it might have been. No, it was Michael Oliver who did Man City Liverpool. It was a big match anyway, and it was Anthony Taylor who was the referee, and it involved, this big match involved Manchester City. And he said, Manchester United Liverpool. Anthony Taylor was the ref, and John Champion said, if he gives too many decisions against Manchester United, then when he's walking his dog tomorrow morning, he'll have a lot of people complaining at him. And he said that in a kind of like light-hearted, as if it was supposed to be a joke kind of way, but he actually hit upon a really good point in that it's got to play into your the way that you do your job is how people treat you as a result of how you do your job in your everyday life. So if he gives a lot of decisions against any Manchester team, and he's walking his dog, as John Champion says, and he gets loads of members of the public giving him abuse, then, you know, unconsciously, because he won't enjoy that because he's a human, believe it or not, then, you know, he will in the next match, he won't give too many decisions against them. And I think this is the thing, which is why it should be illegal for them to be from Manchester. But we've been over this many times.
How are they being let? A person from the same city as a team being allowed. And there's five of them. There's five referees, I think, from Manchester. How are they being allowed to referee a team?
What's interesting as well, you've got David Coote, and when you used to Google David Coote a few years ago when he first started refereeing in the Premier League, as I did, and there were a lot of links to Manchester. He was at one point, he was the head of refereeing in Manchester in terms of bringing referees through and being a referee trainer. And now there's no sentences about that. There's no knowledge about that. There are no more. He's taken that off the internet, basically, which is pretty interesting. But anyway, let's not. Well, I want to move on because we covered a lot of this already in Cop On this season.
Yeah, sure.
Let's look at what's going on. Okay, so we got two games left of the season. The first one's against Aston Villa, and we've got loads of things to talk about. Jürgen's leaving, of course he is. Two games left. He might get a ban if he says too much against the refs against Villa. Then he'll be banned from the touchline at Anfield. So he's already mentioned that he's going to do everything he can to behave himself and be a good boy, so that he's not banned from the touchline at Anfield, which would be pretty funny, but you know, obviously very sad at the same time. So yes, I just feel Liverpool we're struggling towards the end of the season in terms of now the pressure is off. The pressure went off against Spurs, and we battered them for long periods of that game. And that's something that I find a little bit disappointing, because obviously the pressure got to us, or the pressure had got to us in previous fixtures where we just went on that awful run. The 1-0 against Crystal Palace was particularly galling, I thought, because they were brilliant. Palace, they deserved to win. And that's unlike Liverpool. And we didn't turn up. And there's been all kinds of things, you know, spats between Mo Salah and Klopp. And I don't know. It's just, it all feels a little bit sad to me, Nigel, though.
I think that was blown out of proportion. I think the Salah Klopp thing was blown out of all proportion. Do you remember the Salah Mane thing against Burnley a few years ago? And suddenly, the press jumped all over it, and it ended up being nothing really. And I don't think it, like, it's two guys who have an elite winning mentality had a little slight disagreement on the sideline. That's all it is. The press jumped all over it and said, "Oh, Salah's going to leave, and Salah's doing this, and Salah's this, and Salah's, and Klopp is this, and Klopp is that." Load of absolute rubbish. They love anything that Liverpool might be involved in, anything kind of, what's the word? I won't say controversial, because it isn't controversial. It's antagonistic within the club. That's what I'm looking for. So no, I think it's nothing. I think that was absolute press blowing everything out of proportion.
Okay. And there are questions about whether, you know, he's got 1 year left on his deal, Mo Salah. There are questions, you know, there are some people saying we should cash in the summer. I do think that's a minority of Liverpool fans, but where do you stand on that idea, cashing in on Mo this summer?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. The press would love that as well. Oh, Liverpool are selling Mo Salah. Now what's going to happen? No. Absolutely, 100% no.
Are you sure it's not in the best interest of the club to get rid of him, though, because he hasn't been the same since he came back from his injury, his hamstring injury?
We can
get a good price.
We could, but no, I don't think so. I think he's worth more than cashing in on him now. I wouldn't even entertain it.
So you would try and offer him a new deal rather than him going for a free?
I would.
So we can finish his career at Liverpool?
Yeah, absolutely.
But is that not being too romantic? I agree with you. I'm just being devil's advocate here. Is that not being too romantic? Because what we can do is we can look at his form in the last sort of five games that he came back from injury, and where he's, you know, I don't know how many goals or whatever he's got, because I haven't had time to do my homework for this episode. But he hasn't done very well.
Nobody has.
But I mean, you know, is that not a sign of things to come in terms of he can have the odd great game, like he was great against Spurs, but there are other games where he's going to struggle. I don't know. Is it better for the club to instead get someone who's going to be more, you know, is going to be hungrier at a younger age, with everything to prove?
No, I just don't think so. No, I think, I'm hoping, and I'm sure everyone else is as well, he has a good summer off, does a good rehab, and comes back Mo Salah all over again. And people are going to be given out, oh, he's only one season wonder after seven seasons.
He's a one season left wonder. Yes, okay, so he can take the time off. In a sense, it's good, isn't it, that he's coming back from injury now, and then there's going to be no more games, and he can really get himself ready for next season. Yeah. What about the Darwin Nunez situation? Because he, because of online abuse, you know, merrily they troll along on X.com or Twitter or whatever, any social media platform. The trolls are happy because they've got Darwin to get rid of his Liverpool pictures from his account. Jürgen Klopp today in his press conference has sort of, you know, poo-pooed the idea that means he's going to leave in the summer. But let's say, for example, I mean, if you think about each player that we've got, right, you can, you know, there's the old keep, loan or sell question. But let's say there are some people who you just wouldn't, like Mo Salah, for example, you just wouldn't let him go for any price. Alisson Becker as well. You would just say no, flat no. I don't think Darwin Nunez is a flat no. I think there is a price for him. And for me, I would take a little bit of a loss on him. If somebody offers like 70 million, I would take it straight away. 60, I would think about it. Anything less than 60, I wouldn't. Ideally, of course, he would stay because there's a hell of a player in there.
Yes, there is.
But are we ever going to see it? Are we ever going to see that player come out of his shell and start banging in 30 a season?
I'd love to see him given 1 year under Slot and see what happens, because we're going to be slightly different under Slot, I'd say, than under Jürgen. So give it 1 year, see how it goes, and then entertain the possibility of him going if things don't work out after that. There's got to be, you know, we were saying years ago when we signed Andy Carroll and Luis Suarez on the same day, and Fernando Torres left Now, we probably wouldn't have signed either one of Andy Carroll or Luis Suarez if Fernando Torres had a stain. But could you have imagined Fernando Torres and Luis Suarez together? That upset me about Torres when he left. Now, I know he got let down. It's come to light. He got let down by promises that were broken to him. So, but I'd love to see him, given the new manager a go. See what comes in, see what goes out. What kind of a setup we're going to have next year. And then after that, we think about it.
I agree. I think that makes total sense. I do wonder about this. You know, there are certain things that are very, very hard to improve upon in football, I find. You know, things that you either have or you don't. One of them is being a clinical finisher. There are the exceptions that can improve their way in which they finish. And another one is football IQ. And I would say, as sad as I am to say it, Darwin Núñez is one of the lowest football IQs that I've seen in a very long time in a red shirt. Apart from, of course, like the players who actually have a lot of talent. I mean, you know, like I'm not talking about, I mean, Joe Cole, for example, didn't have any kind of IQ, football or otherwise, I think, not without being too harsh. But Darwin, you know, I believe he's had a record number of offsides this season with two games left. I believe it's like 39 offsides, it's just a Premier League record. And I just think that those kinds of things are going to be hard to get rid of next season. But what he can do is just start putting away the bigger chances so we can try and work on his finishing, but that's going to be hard as well. I don't know, because with Benfica, he got 31 goals in 34 games or whatever. So he knows where the back of the net is, but it's just, you know, he's hit the bar and post loads of times, but I don't know. Jürgen Klopp said, it's really tough for a young man. He knows about the expectations and he has big expectations for himself. Darwin was definitely not happy missing that chance against Spurs. And he was unlucky in so many situations where he's doing everything right and then the ball still doesn't go in. There's truth in that. And what we're saying, I think, is just give him one more season to see if the bad luck can turn, right?
More so than bad luck, can he turn it around himself? Never mind bad luck, you make your luck. See, can he get his head down and score us a few goals and start hitting the target more regularly? Never mind bad luck, just start scoring and things can move on from there then.
Well, yeah, fair enough. Okay. Speaking of moving on, who else is going to move on this summer? I mean, I don't know. Thiago's leaving. That's another sad thing in the camp.
We saw glimpses. It's like the water by song. I saw the crescent. You saw the whole of the moon. We never saw the whole of the moon.
Very Joe nice. Matthew. Yes.
Been a great servant to us. Been outstanding. We'll miss the madness.
I mean, let's talk about both of those. I mean, you know, that Thiago. I mean, you just summed it up beautifully. Yeah, the waning of his career. If he had stayed fit, we could have seen, you know, just the glorious performances. I mean, the way that he put the ball. What was it? Somebody said he plays football like he invented it. I love that, and I think he'd be a very, very good coach in the future. I would love to. Yeah. Liverpool can, I don't know, maybe Arne Slot. There are some, for several vacancies. He can maybe find something for Thiago. But Joel Matip. I mean, I think he's been like an absolute wonder, you know, in terms of Premier League defenders. I put him up there with the best Premier League defenders I've seen. Joel Matip, that's how much I rate him. Am I overstating it, Nigel?
No, free transfer. One of the best free
regardless of the price, I'm saying, you know, like, I mean, if you know, but he's just, you know, regardless of the price, if you look at the best Premier League defenders in history, or even old First Division, if you like, for me, Joel Matip's up there.
He's been incredible for us. Now, just slight caveat to that, once Virgil came in, he could look a little dodgy at times, look more dodgy before Virgil came in, but when Virgil came in, ideal partner for Virgil. He was really good, and he just settled in alongside him there, and a lot of times didn't get half enough credit that he should have got. He's been magnificent for us. I'd be sad to see Joel go. Looked like a very, very popular member in the dressing room as well, which is always good, you know.
Well, totally. I mean, are there any, you know, the things that would stick out for me that I will remember is him like flailing his limbs and a very comical way that he complains for things. It's very he's an unusual character in terms of the way that he gesticulates, isn't he? But what will be my abiding memory is, you know, the amazing runs forward, the amazing reading of the game, the brilliant passing, blocking, defending, proper defending, where you don't, you know, you're not Matt Dawson or whatever, one of these West Ham defenders or Wolves defenders chucking yourself at the football, you know, fight for your life kind of defender. He was just class, you know. He was in the Maldini category.
Yeah. Scored some really good goals. That last minute winner against Ajax in the Europa, I think it was, or was it Champions League? Could have been Champions League. He scored a last minute winner there, scored a really good goal. His first goal, I think, against Crystal Palace. Scored a really good header in the year we won the league against Arsenal, the first goal of the game when we won 3-1, scored the first goal that day. That brilliant running goal against Leeds. That big smile when somebody scored, and his celebrations and when we won trophies as well was always really good. It was always a joy to watch him. And of course, the tantrums were amazing.
Absolutely. I mean, it's 150 Premier League appearances exactly for Joel Matip. 9 goals, 5 assists, 54 clean sheets. And I'm looking at a comparison with Rio Ferdinand, who played 504 appearances with 11 goals and 8 assists. So, I mean, you know, Joel Matip, you can divide by 3 Rio Ferdinand's stats, or multiply Matip's stats by 3, it's easier to do in your head. So Joel Matip, 150 games compared to 504. It's a little bit more than multiplying by 3, but you get the idea of, if we're going to do a comparison between them, you know, so Rio Ferdinand in his 500-odd games made 130 blocks, whereas Joel Matip made 67. So if you put that if you sort of adjust that and imagine that Joel Matip had played 450 times, about the same as Rio Ferdinand, then he would be miles ahead in terms of blocks. Interceptions, Rio Ferdinand made 341 and Joel Matip 206. So multiply that by 3 and you've got him, he's twice as good as Rio Ferdinand in terms of reading the game. Tackles made, Rio Ferdinand 292 tackles in 500 games, and Joel Matip 221 in a third of the amount of games as Rio Ferdinand. So again, multiply that by 3 and you've got 663 tackles compared to Rio Ferdinand's 292. And we're still being generous to Rio Ferdinand because it's multiplied by 3 and a bit is the correct calculation. In terms of tackles, in terms of clearances, it's quite close there, but Matip, adjusted for appearances, was better at clearances, tackles, interceptions, blocks. He's way better in the air. This is a crazy stat. Rio Ferdinand only won 315 headers in his 500 games, whereas Joel Matip won 418 in 150 games. So he's miles ahead in every single metric, including own goals. He would shade at 65, but there you go.
With Joel Matip, when he was scoring, when Virgil was there, sometimes he relied on Virgil's pace a bit more, so Joel would come and meet the ball a little bit quicker sometimes than Virgil would. And he's very, very good in the air, big, you know, very, very hard to beat.
Absolutely. And the amount of teams who would not know that, and they would put their their best striker to sort of stand on Matip as opposed to even trying to compete with Virgil, and be absolutely crushed by Jean Matip. I find that quite extraordinary. I've never seen that until just now. So in terms of everything, every single metric, blocks, interceptions, tackles, clearances, headed clearances, aerial battles won, Joel Matip is miles ahead of Rio Ferdinand. And you can make it that as...
won't be talked about for obvious reasons.
Pardon?
Well, I said it won't be talked about for obvious reasons that we won't go into. We don't need to.
Because of the media agenda, so to speak?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but podcasting is the new media. All of those news things, and they're all dying out, you know? So, you know, this is it. This is we are the future of the media. It's just people giving their actual opinions based on research and not based on just plucking things out of the air or plucking things out of the toilet in Garth Crooks's case. Okay. So we talked a bit, the sad parting of Joel Matip and Thiago Alcantara. We've got a match. We've got a match to play against Aston Villa. You say you haven't seen much of Aston Villa. Have you seen anything at all of them?
I saw a little bit of them last week against Olympiacos. And I have to say, that guy up front for Olympiacos, they got the hat-trick and got the two goals last night. Looked very, very good.
I didn't see any of it, so you have to tell me about that. Who's that? What's going on?
I can't remember his name now. One more. I can't remember his name. I can't remember where he's from.
Ayoub El Kabi.
Yes, that's the guy.
He scored 6-2 on aggregate. I didn't even see that. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
And he scored five of the goals. He scored a hat trick last week and two last night.
Okay.
And he looked.
Oh, there you go. Sign him up.
He looked a very, very good player. And they had.
He's 30 years old.
The guy who was really terrorizing them as well, though, was Daniel Podence on loan from Wolves. Oh, he gave them an awful time. So what we want to see is Luis Diaz hugging the touchline and maybe cutting inside a few times and going at Villa. That's what we want to see. That's exactly what Podence was doing. He was having a go at them. Like, stick Darwin down the middle and maybe even stick Mo up the middle alongside him or playing slightly off him and stick Diaz in behind those two instead of just playing the three wide and then kind of fan out and into various positions, if you know what I mean. Don't just play the top three so they can have a set position and they can just be marked. Move them around. Like, come off, play off the shoulder and then play wide. You know, let's not be like sticking to a position for our front three. Run at these Villa guys. They're not that good. You know what I mean? They have like Matty Cash, who's half decent. And like the guy in the middle of the field, Douglas Luiz, missed a penalty last week, gave away a penalty and then missed a penalty. And
I like him though. I like Douglas.
I do too. But he kind of looked a bit
knackered.
Season is finished. End of season. It looked a bit end of season for him last week. Mm-hmm. I was watching with my dad and my brother-in-law last week, and we were watching a bit of the match, and they got a penalty, and Douglas Luiz was standing up, and he said he's going to miss this. I see it in his eyes, and he put it wide. Mm-hmm. I said he's going to put it wide at the right hand post, and he did. And he looked a bit. I don't want to be here, kind of. But he was thinking he was trying to make up for the giving away a penalty. The guy hit a shot and he kind of attacked the ball like that.
Oh no! You have to explain to the audio listeners. What do you mean like that?
He had his hands at head height.
Okay.
And I kind of crossed over and the ball hit his hand. Right. And it's a penalty every day of the week. Now, if you've got your hand above your waist, now the way it's supposed to be officiated, if you've got your hands above your waist, now it's a penalty. And it was, and it had to be. And then he went up and missed the penalty at the other end. But yeah, Villa looked tired. Villa looked very, very tired. So get in there and have a go at them.
They're on a bad run, quietly. They lost to Lille on April the 18th. Then they beat Bournemouth 3-1, good result. Then they drew with Chelsea at home, which is not a bad result, given Chelsea's upturn in form. Then they lost to Olympiacos, they lost to Brighton, they lost to Olympiacos again. And in that time, in three matches, they've only scored two goals. So, things are looking good for Villa versus Liverpool. I mean, of course, we are all somewhat you know, embedded, drilled or chiseled into the dark corner of our memory, the prisons of our mind, is the 7-2 defeat against Aston Villa. Looking at the stats, Aston Villa that was the only match they've won in the last 12 Premier League games against Liverpool. They've drawn one, won one, and lost 10 of the last 12. So the only one they won was that 7-2 at Villa Park. It's kind of
every deflection goal went in.
Yeah, it was a freak result. And then we had Adrian in goal, didn't we?
Yeah. Every ball fell or every deflection. Jack Grealish just falls on his face, as usual, all the time. And he hit two or three shots and they're just deflection. They were taking 20 and 30 yard deflections. I don't care who. They're going to have four goalkeepers in. Mm. If the ball hits a man and goes on a big deflection, they're not stopping us.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You know, the omens are good. But yeah, I don't know, going forward, who are we? I mean, it doesn't really matter. I'm not even bothered about doing lineups and things like that. I do think the league is more or less done. I think we can relax. We can, you know, by the time we play on Monday night, it will be, you know, mathematically done. We can relax in the last two games. We can, you know, try and end on a positive note by beating Villa and beating Wolves. If we don't, doesn't matter. Nothing matters at this stage, I don't think. But going into, you know, going into next season, we need to think about who we would keep and who we would sell and who we wouldn't. So, you know, in terms of minutes this season, off the top of your head, do you know who's played the most amount of minutes for us this season?
Most minutes. I don't, but that's a tough one. We've missed it. We've missed a lot of players. I'm trying to think now. Go through the team.
There's one player. I think we've played a total of like about 52, 53 games. And one player has started 43, which is the most in our team, and that's Virgil. Virgil has played 3,893 minutes this season, which is crazy. Followed by Luis Diaz, 3,451.
That was the name I was going to say first. I was going to say Luis Diaz.
So, let's think about it one by one then. Virgil van Dijk, that's a lot of minutes for a 32-year-old. Going into next season, he'll be 33. Arne Slot coming in, his compatriot. But we're both keeping Virgil, there's no question. There's no price that anyone can give. He's 100% keeper, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so Luis Diaz, he's got a price for me, man. 13 goals and 5 assists from 3,451 minutes, being 40 starts, 13 goals, 5 assists. He's 27 years old. You'd get a good price for him.
70, 80 million?
70 or 80 million. If someone offers you 70 for Luis Diaz, would you take it?
I'd be hoping if someone was going to offer 70 million and we were going to accept it, we'd have somebody else lined up. That's what I'd be hoping.
But on that, you can get someone with better stats. Mm. If you're going off the stats, you can get someone with better stats than 13 goals and 5 assists from 40 starts and 3,500 minutes.
Excuse me.
Bless you.
I consider 70 million. Other than that, no.
Okay. What was his name? Who was really good the other night? For Dortmund. What's his name? Where is he? Why is he not on this list? Adeyemi. There you go. He's only played 853 minutes, so he's obviously been injured. 9 starts, 3 goals and 1 assist. It's not very much. He's also 1-3. Daniel Marlin has also been injured. 20 starts in this is in the Bundesliga, 12 goals and 1 assist, so he's better than a goal every 2 games. But again, not really. He doesn't really capture my imagination.
Reliability.
Yeah. So who's I don't know, who's doing the most, who's scoring the most goals and in Europe for wingers. It's hard to know, but we want someone.
Who's this PSG guy? We've been linked with that guy from PSG, the winger.
Mbappe.
PSV, sorry.
Oh, PSV. Oh, okay. Oh, PSV. I don't know. Let me have a look.
There was a guy, I can't remember his name. PSV Eindhoven, winger, number 11. I can't remember his name.
Bakayoko?
Yes.
See, okay, now he's had two, just in the Dutch league, 2,380 minutes, 12 goals and 9 assists. So it's pretty much the same productivity-wise, but in 1,000 fewer minutes. So 33% less of playing time. So, and he's only 21. He only turned 21 20 days ago.
We will be linked with him.
He looks good to me, man, because these are the kind of stats where players,
he's kind of blocky and quick. You know what I mean? He's got that kind of bit of his physique about him.
Well, he looks very interesting to me. Yeah, Johan Bakayoko.
We've been linked with him.
Well, it looks really good to me. Yeah, that kind of thing. Leicester have a player as well, and I quite like the idea of signing players from the Championship. You know, that Leicester winger is really good. The young guy, Abdul Fatawu Issahaku. Hang on,
Mvidi or something was the guy I thought you were talking about. They've only signed the guy. Leicester have another guy. They've only just signed him permanently. He was there on loan. I can't remember now.
Madivadua?
Yeah, that's one of them. That's the guy. But there was a rumor going around there a while ago that if Leicester get promoted, they're going to be savaged by FFP.
Okay.
So watch this space on Leicester.
Well, I mean, if that's the case, Dewsbury Hall, 25 years old, 41 starts in midfield, 3,636 minutes. And from midfield, 12 goals and 14 assists.
Scored against us in the League Cup.
He's a brilliant player. He reminds you of Jimmy Milner. He's a sort of an all-round player. And he's strong. He loves to tackle.
Yeah.
If there was a way of bringing him to Liverpool, I would love that. Mm. But Issahaku is the player that I was thinking of. Yeah, his stats aren't great. Only 6 goals and 13 assists from 2,800 minutes. But he's only just turned 20. And he got a hat trick in one of his last games, and he was utterly amazing. So yeah, there's that guy. But I think for Luis Diaz, you can pick up a player like that. Go on.
Just another name to throw you, mm-hmm. Fabio Carvalho.
Interesting. Yeah,
he's coming back. Mm-hmm. He'll come back. He's on loan to Hull, and he's coming. He'll come back into the new manager. See what happens there. I wouldn't. He started off all right for us. I remember him scoring a really good goal against Bournemouth in the 9-0. Scored a really nice goal. And then scored that winner in the 99th minute against Newcastle as well. He's got plenty of potential there. He's a very good player, that lad.
9, my computer's going a bit crazy here. 9 goals and 2 assists from 1,717 minutes. That's pretty good. 9 goals and 2 assists. Only 2 assists though, but he's got potential because he's still young, Fabio Carvalho. He's 21. In the Championship, 9 goals and 2 assists. He did nothing in the Bundesliga, but then he only had 165 minutes in 9 matches, so presumably that was all substitute appearances. Yes, I think that's a very good point, but I don't want that from on the left. I want someone pacey. So whether we have a change in structure and play like a 4-2-3-1, which would suit Carvalho and Harvey Elliott very well.
Yes.
I don't know,
the only thing is he lacks a bit of pace.
Yeah, exactly. We need that. We need pace. In terms of defensive midfielder, someone like Konrad Laimer, he was brilliant for Bayern the other day.
Yeah, that's my big issue. That is my crux of the whole thing. We need the Rodri figure, someone who can go out and. Now we won't. We'll never under the current regime anyway. We'll never have a guy who can go around kicking the absolute crap out of anything that moves and not getting booked.
Yes,
You know, Fernandinho could do it. Rodri, it seems, can do it. There's a few others can just hack people down and nothing said. But that's mm-hmm. what we need. We need presence. We need a guy who's got it up there to be able to just say it. Like, right, we need to take do such and such to control the game. And if someone's going to have to be kicked, someone's going to have to be kicked.
I mean, Douglas Luiz.
Yeah.
He's a great player. He's only 26. He turned 26 yesterday. Happy birthday. And yeah, I think he's a great player. But whether Aston Villa would sell is another question. But yeah, okay. Going back to Liverpool. Okay, Alexis McAllister, of course. He's the next one down on the list in terms of minutes played. 3,328 minutes played. I'm not selling him. But love nor money. You can put a gun to my head and I just say, pull the trigger rather than sell McAllister. Yeah.
I just hope he's been played in the more forward role.
Yes.
That's the big thing. When he's been played in the more forward role, he did okay playing in a defensive role, but it's not his position. He hasn't got the pace to play that position, but he's got enough pace and a brain to play in the other position.
Excellent. Yeah, I totally agree. Next on the list, Joe Gomez. I'm keeping Joe Gomez. I love his versatility.
Yep.
He's played 3,055 minutes. He's fourth on the list for minutes played this season in all comps. Fifth on the list, Darwin Nunez. We've spoken about him. Sixth on the list, Mohamed Salah. We've spoken about him. Seventh on the list is Cody Gakpo. And I don't know about you, Cody Gakpo has 15 goals and 6 assists. Maybe he's the guy to take Luis Diaz's place. Just stick him on the left in his favourite position.
Absolutely. You could see, I remember when we were, before we signed him, it was in the World Cup last year, I think. And I remember I was raving over him because I was seeing this guy picking up the ball in a left-sided position and running at people and hammering the ball into the top corner. He scored a great goal for Holland in the World Cup. And I like Cody Gakpo. I've got really good time for him. The last couple of games, he's been really, really good. The cross he gave from Mo Salah last week was outstanding. A great ball. And then Harvey gave him a return ball, a wonderful cross as well. And another really, really good header by Cody. I think, he's not going anywhere.
He's been a bright spark amongst all this very, very poor last few performances. I think he's been absolutely brilliant. And what I've loved about his play is how he seems to have learned the obvious thing and got better at the obvious thing. Like, so for example, for Darwin Nunez, you could say it's the offsides, an obvious thing that he needs to improve on. But Cody Gakpo, it was the amount of like physicality that he wasn't using at the start of the season compared to now, whereas, you know, players are bouncing off him left, right and center. He's driving with the ball absolutely beautifully, and it's great to see. I love this player. He's only 25.
I'd just like to see a little bit more aggression.
Well, I think we've seen it in the past few. You want to see even more than the past few games?
Proper aggression. I mean not physicality, I mean aggression.
Okay.
I mean, if someone is coming up to him and he's, no way. I'm 6'3". You're not standing up to me kind of job. Mm-hmm. No. I think the physicality has improved, but I want to see aggression.
I want
to see him jumping for a ball and the other guy not being able to get anywhere near for physicality and aggression. There's a difference between physical and being aggressive. I want aggression.
I like it. I'm not sure if we'll see it from Cody. I would love to see it, but I'm not sure it's in his personality to be aggressive.
Might be like that.
Yeah. Okay. But I mean, it's great. You know, congratulations to him on becoming a dad as well. That's
absolutely
very good news.
Grateful.
And it's good to see the player settling down and having kids, and now, you know, he's got really something to, you know, hopefully he's feeling grounded going into the new season. Arne Schlott absolutely might be able to get the best out of him. And yeah, forget all the scouting we did before about looking at stats of a couple of players. Just put Cody on the left as his best position. 15 goals and 6 assists from 2,863 minutes. That's 600 minutes fewer than Luis Diaz. So, and he's been more effective. He scored more goals and got one more assist, and he's been played out of position. So I think Cody, it's going to be his year. Next year is going to be his year.
I hope so.
Alisson is the next one, of course. There's no price for Alisson. He's just an absolute legend. Dominic Szoboszlai. Ooh. Is there a price for him? He's 23 years old now. Is there a price?
No, I don't think so. Not yet. I don't think so. Not yet.
You wouldn't sell him?
I just see how it goes under the new manager. He had a great start last year. He got injured, and he just didn't find his way back after the injury. So hopefully he has a good European Championships with Hungary. And we can play him in a more natural position for him, rather than being, so to speak, the water carrier, being the guy who's been given the ball and can work the spaces along with McAllister, rather than having to do the donkey work.
He's good at the donkey work, though. I like him running and chasing.
He works extremely hard, this chasing crack that he does. He works extremely hard, but I just like to see him doing it the other way.
Yes, okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and feeling free, and hopefully not weighed down by the Gerrard comparisons or whatever that people were making at the beginning of the season. But yeah, I mean, 2,674 minutes, 7 goals, 4 assists, big injury because he was probably overplayed, which is something that I hope Arne Slot will, not make that mistake. But the last one I want to talk to you for today, because we've been talking for an hour and I'm aware that you've got to get back to work. Harvey Elliott. Now, Harvey Elliott, this is another one like Cody Gakpo, where it's the end of the season, but I'd love to watch more of Harvey Elliott, because in recent months, weeks, there's this big crescendo in his form. And now for me, when he's on the pitch, he should start games. That whole argument of him being better off the bench, he seems to have put that to bed a little bit, and he can use these last two games to really prove himself as a deserved starter in this team. I mean, he's actually been involved in 51 matches, but he's only started 25 of those 51 matches. So he's had 2,646 minutes with 4 goals and 9 assists in all competitions. So 13 goals and assists from 25 starts, basically, if you want to look at it that way, which is very, very, very good. But there's something just magical about him. He's 21 years old and 36 days as we're recording this. So he's only just turned 21. And he's just moving into a new chapter. He's opening the new chapter of the book, and they've got some blank pages, and he's an artist. And I think he's going to fill these pages with some really creative and ingenious work. How are you feeling about Harvey?
Yeah, I think he has the potential to be such an important player for us. The one criticism I have of Harvey is he frustrates me when he's playing sometimes. Too many touches on the ball. I'd love to see him just getting the ball out of his feet, one touch pass. Sometimes it's 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 touches. And it can get a bit frustrating when we're struggling to break down a team. And it's given teams kind of a chance to set up a line against us sometimes. Now, he's not the only one that does it. We've been doing it far too much as a team. But I'd love to see him taking responsibility. And when the ball is coming to him, I used to be taught people to tell me, try and have it mind up and your mind made up before you get the ball where you're going to try and put it. I'd love to see him, like, before the ball is coming into his left foot and Mo was out on the right hand side, that he's got his in his mind already that Mo's going to be there and he won't have to take an extra touch. Just bang, just ping it out into the corner, or ping it into Cody Gakpo's feet, or Darwin Nunez's feet, or over the top to Darwin. That's what I'd love to see. I'd love to see a more fluent Harvey Elliott, so to speak, but he's got so much potential. He's an excellent player.
Especially with his one touch game. Okay, yeah, interesting. I hadn't noticed him sort of taking too many touches, but I will keep an eye out for that, because I'm sure you're right. Yes, okay. But yeah, I mean, in terms of the exciting things about his game, I mean, he's improved so much, I think, this season. He's really come into his own. But I mean, you know, in terms of the amounts of shots he's taking and the assists and expected assists, expected goals, shot creating actions, progressive passes, progressive carries, touches in the attacking penalty area, and progressive passes received, he's in the 94th percentile or higher, which is bananas for someone so young to be have so many metrics where you're in the top 6% in Europe. But the most encouraging thing, because I look at these stats from fbref.com all the time, and his tackles are only in the 41st percentile, but that's up from like the third or fourth percentile, which is where he was this time last year. And his interceptions are very bad, the 14th percentile, but that's up from the first percentile. So he's jumped up 13%. His blocks, 82. He's in the 82nd percentile now for his blocks, and that's a massive improvement. Obviously, in terms of clearances and aerials won, you don't expect him to score very highly, but he could maybe read where the ball is going a bit more, read the game a little bit more in terms of interceptions and clearances defensively. But big improvements in terms of blocking and even tackling, even though he's far from being a solid midfielder. I think he might be able to get, you know, to keep improving on that. But the good stuff, the, you know, the progressive passing and the carrying of the ball and getting into the box and getting into great positions and finding his teammates, you know, I think he's done marvelously well. So well done to him. So yeah, two games left. Aston Villa, who, you know, as we mentioned earlier, they've been, you know, sort of slipping off a bit of a cliff recently. So we'll see what happens there. And Wolves as well, who've been on the beach for a little while. They've been on the beach. They've got sunburn. They've been there for so long. Nigel, thank you very, very, very much for joining me so long. And it's been a pleasure, as always, to hear your views. And is there anything else you expect from these two games? It's like, well, you don't really care. You're going to just try and enjoy them as best you can.
No, I want to see our lads go out with a good attitude. That's what I want to see. Because our fans are going to be there with a good attitude. I want to see the players doing the same thing. And let's give Jurgen Klopp a good send-off. Simple as that.
Excellent. Excellent stuff. And on the idea of send-offs, I'm going to give you a couple of verses from a longer poem by the great John Donne called A Valediction, forbidding mourning, mourning. So forbidding mourning, a valediction by John Donne. This is the first two verses. And before I get into it, you should know that the word laity, L-A-I-T-Y, it's all of the lay people, the common people. Okay, you should need to know that word before I start. And here are the first two verses, and it may be apt for our situation. As virtuous men pass mildly away and whisper to their souls to go, whilst some of their sad friends do say the breath goes now, and some say no, so let us melt and make no noise, no tear floods, nor sigh tempests move. 'Twere profanation of our joys to tell the lady our love. Thank you very much, Nigel. Thank you to everybody, you fruity beauty listeners. And we'll be speaking to you as soon as we can. This is Cop On Podcast, copon podcast@gmail.com. And all the best. Lots of love. You'll never walk alone.